Welcome to Let's Get Physical. The material presented on this show are for educational purposes only and are not to be used as a substitute for medical advice from your healthcare professional.
Hi, this is Dr. Chin. You're back with Let's Get Physical. And, you know, the first thing I'd like to do is to make a correction. I actually listened to my own show and gave some bad information. So I said, last time I told you that I'd been on the staff of a community hospital 20 years ago or so, but I heard that and I thought about it. That isn't right. I went and looked. It was more like 35 years ago.
Oh, my God.
So I'll tell you, folks, when you start thinking that 35 years is really 20, you know you're getting old.
It's over now. I'm sorry, Dr. Chin.
That isn't good. But and that made sense. I thought about it because I thought, it's been a long time since we treated low back pain like that. So I went back and looked at my record. So let's correct the record for that, okay? Secondly, I told you that I ordered a scan on a patient. I knew there was something wrong with the patient, and the scan came out clean. And so I called the radiologist, and we spoke. And, you know, the reason I was so persistent there is that some piece of advice I got from my dad. And my dad was in family practice for 50 years. He was a physician and surgeon, and he always told me, you know, treat the patient, not the test. That's a huge, just invaluable piece of advice. You treat the patient, not the test. And sometimes you have to treat or follow your instincts rather than the test, because the test can be wrong, whether it's a blood test or an image of some sort. The test can be wrong. Rheumatoid arthritis is a classic example. You know, I've had patients come in and it looks like they have a red, hot, swollen joint. It looks like rheumatoid. It's either rheumatoid or gout, something like that. And I don't treat those, so I send them back to their primary care doc, and they'll draw some blood. And a patient may come back, and frequently would come back and say, well, it's not rheumatoid. My RA factor was negative. Well, just because you have a negative RA factor doesn't mean you don't have rheumatoid. What it means is you have to redo the test in a couple of weeks or a couple of months, and sometimes it takes a while to do what's called seroconvert, so for the test to go from negative to positive. There are other tests that can be run to help confirm that, but my point is you treat the patient, not the test. Treat the patient, not the test. The test. That there's just no test for yet. And we may talk more about that. Diseases, because it's pretty common stuff. You know, in this country, 1 in 12 women will be struck with an autoimmune disease, and about 1 in 20 men. And that's a lot of people. And it's not always easy to know if you have an autoimmune disease. So we should spend a little time talking about that. But today I told you we were going to talk about sciatica, and we will. But before we do that, we need to review a little bit. So let's go back to that anatomy in the lumbar spine, low back. You may recall that there are 5 vertebrae, usually. They're separated and connected by something called the intervertebral disc, which is essentially a 2-part structure, thick jelly in the middle, surrounded by some really tough ligaments around the outside, essentially describing a jelly donut, except the outside of that jelly donut is really, really strong. It's really, really strong, at least for the... You may also recall, if you were with us last time, that we talked about how the disc can deform. When you bend forward especially, it puts a lot of pressure on that jelly, and the jelly will start pushing backwards towards your backside until it starts to tear into those ligaments. We used a visual analogy of a marshmallow between two crackers. Now, let's imagine those crackers are really strong, okay? And you push straight down on those crackers with even pressure all around, and your marshmallow starts to deform. It gets shorter in height, but it gets bigger in diameter. And your disc will do that too, eventually, gradually, hopefully. If you put pressure on one side of the crackers, you'll notice that that side of the marshmallow shrinks in height, but the other side increases in height. And if there was jelly inside that marshmallow, it would be pushed towards that wide part of the marshmallow. And that's what happens when you bend forward. You push that jelly in your disc towards your backside, and eventually it will start to invade those ligaments. Well, that's pretty much a silent process until that jelly hits the outer third of the ligaments. And that's where the pain fibers are, the pain-sensitive nerves, and that's when you start to have discomfort. And sometimes it can be bad. And let's take a moment to pause here and also talk about how our knowledge here has changed so much. I was just reviewing an old, one of my old textbooks written by Rene Callier. He wrote a whole series of books. He was one of my favorite guys, brilliant person. And that book was published in 1977. The last edition was 1983, the last one that I had. And state of knowledge at that time was that the disc was insensate, that had no nerve endings. So that was 1983, and I'm not sure who or when figured it out, but by the mid-90s, we knew that there were pain-sensitive nerve endings in the disc. So, you know, the state of the art changes. Anyway, let's go back to that bulging, to that disc. When the jelly starts to tear into your ligaments, it tears from the inside out. And Robin McKenzie, physical therapist from New Zealand, we mentioned him last time, he proposed that that is what was causing a lot of back pain. And if the disc was going backwards into one side, he called that a derangement. He classified his derangements as 1, 2, or 3, depending on where that jelly was invading. And the McKenzie practitioner, trained McKenzie practitioner, can look at you, don't even have to touch you, but can look at you and tell what your disc is doing most of the time and give you corrective maneuvers to push that jelly back where it belongs and hopefully get it to heal. We also mentioned that sometimes that derangement gets up some momentum, a head of steam, and you just can't stop it, and the darn stuff will come out. The jelly tears all the way through the ligament, and once it comes out, it's out. It's like toothpaste comes out of the tube. You can't get it back in. But it does shrink most of the time. And so that's the good news. In a young, healthy person, young being younger than 70 probably, your body sends these macrophages, and the macrophages start to eat that material, that nuclear material, because it's not recognized. It appears to be a foreign body. And over a period of 4 to 6 weeks, that old disc will shrink right up. We talked about that too. So that's the good news. Now, the bad news is, by the time we're 50, 60, 70, our discs have lost some height, whether we like it or not. They're just not as robust and healthy as they were. As they lose height, imagine your marshmallow between those crackers, right? Your marshmallow is getting shorter and shorter and wider and wider. So as it spreads laterally, it will take up space that it wasn't meant to occupy. And so when this happens and you start to lose that space, there is less room for the nerves that are trying to traverse that area. There's less room for those nerves to peacefully go about their business. And when a chunk of disc starts to take up space where it's not supposed to be, it may compress that nerve. And, you have to really hope and pray that your body can absorb enough of that nerve to enough of the disc material to decompress your nerve. And so if you're 40 years old and you rupture a disc and we scan it, we confirm that there's a rupture. If you're 40 years old, we don't see a lot of degenerative changes. You're not diabetic. You're not overweight. And you don't smoke. There's an excellent chance that thing's going to resolve on its own. You don't do anything. Well, you don't have to do much. Now, let's talk for just about a minute about the patient's responsibility here. And this is a huge deal. Because when I had patients come in, sometimes they'd come in and, if they came in and they looked to me like they had a derangement, many times we could we could stop that and we could reverse it, push that jelly back where it belongs. And, you know, a few weeks later, person feels pretty good. But sometimes the thing, it just couldn't stop it. Or sometimes they'd come in after it ruptured. And so the toothpaste is out of the tube. Then what do? Well, the most important thing that you can do as a patient with a ruptured disc is to not rupture any more disc. So I'm serious. You know, that sounds foolish. I mean, it sounds kind of silly, but it's absolutely true, because when that jelly tore through those ligaments, it made a weak spot. Now, it came out, and those ligaments have sort of a self-sealing mechanism. They kind of close up behind that jelly, but they're not as strong as they were before, especially in the first 6 or 8 weeks. They're trying to heal, but it's really, really easy to re-rupture. And I remember I had a talk with my favorite neuro. I sent most of my disc problems when they required surgery, which is not often. But when they did, I would send them to my favorite guy, who happened to be at the Swedish Neuroscience Center. And I called him one day, and I was talking to him, and he was a little distraught. And he had just surgerized a patient with a ruptured disc, and surgery went beautifully. The disc was right where he expected it. He was able to debride the area and close the patient up. Patient felt great. Patient was leaving the hospital and re-ruptured. Didn't even make it to his car. And so it's a weak spot, folks. It's a weak spot. So you better be careful. And so when I say be careful, what does that mean? It means try to minimize the pressure that's going to cause more of that jelly to come out of that weak spot. So how do you do that? Well, we go back to the big five that we talked about before, which, number one, preserve your curve. For those of you who weren't here last week, you can look at the website, maybe see a picture. But when you look at a person from the side, if they're wearing a swimsuit, you see that their low back kind of dishes in a little bit in a nice gentle curve. That's called the lumbar lordosis. And when that lordosis is present, the pressure on your discs is about as low as it can be, other than when you're lying down. So number one is preserve that curve. Number two, never sit for more than 20 minutes. And I know I'm being redundant here, but these are important. You follow these rules, you tend to get better. And if you don't, you have issues. So number two is never sit for more than 20 minutes. Why not? Why don't we sit for more than 20 minutes? Well, because when you sit, no matter how good your chair is and no matter how careful you are, you tend to lose that curve. It tends to flatten out and then reverse. And you can hurt yourself just as badly sitting for an hour improperly as you can bending over and picking something up incorrectly. So you never sit for more than 20 minutes. Number three, stand and stretch every 20 minutes, no matter what you do. Just get up and reach for the sky or whatever your doctor or your therapist tells you to do, but just don't sit for more than 20 minutes. Number four, do the corrective maneuvers that your therapist, whether it's a McKenzie practitioner or whoever you're seeing, do the corrective maneuvers frequently, not just once a day or once a week, but several times daily. And number five is walk. Walk and walk and walk. And if you think you've walked enough, then walk a little more. And generally speaking, when I had people come in with acute low back pain, we'd put them through the protocol, usually the McKenzie stuff, not always. And when they got better and they got on a walking program, if they could get out and walk between 5,000 and 10,000 steps a day, they rarely came back with low back pain. It's that effective. So, and this is all stuff that's free and it's easy to do. Now, having said that, I did have patients come back with recurrent low back pain, and you know, they'd have a hot disc and we'd treat it and it would get better. And a few months they'd come back, a few months later they come back and it's back again. So what happened? Well, sometimes they, you know, they just sat too long. Sometimes they bent over incorrectly. Sometimes they did this, sometimes they did that. But a lot of times what would happen is that the weather would change and it would start to rain. And you know, this area, it could rain 2 weeks straight. And they look outside and it's raining and they don't walk. And they don't walk for a few days. If you don't walk for a few days, your back doesn't forgive you. You know, you can't walk 10 miles in a week and figure that's going to cover you for the next 2 months. It doesn't work like that. You can't bank that stuff. You have to do it regularly. So they would stay inside and watch Wheel of Fortune and, you know, and then run into these issues and they'd come back. And sometimes I would just throw my hands up in here. Well, in my mind, I'd throw my hands up in here and just, you know, and then after we treat them and leave, and I'd say, God, Patty, I don't know why I even bother. And she would remind me, because you have to, because if you try and you keep trying, it will get through to some of these folks. And if you don't try, it's not going to get through. So I kept trying. Anyway, where were we now? Truman, can you reel me back in, man? 5 to 10,000 steps. Yeah, okay. So sciatica, what is it anyway? We better talk about what sciatica is, because we're supposed to talk about that. And I've already blown, 15 minutes? Okay, so sciatica, by definition, what is it? When people would come in and they'd say, Doc, I got sciatic. Okay, well, tell me, what's that mean to you? Well, I got pain here. And usually they would point to their low back, right? Well, if you have low back pain, that's one thing, but it's not necessarily sciatica. So the sciatic nerve is a big nerve that runs from your spine to your toes. It starts from contributions from the lower five segments of your spine, and nerve roots come out of those areas, and they coalesce into a big fat nerve that runs through your pelvis and, you know, through your butt, down your thigh, and bifurcates, and goes all the way into your leg, and it gives you sensation, so you can tell if your foot is in hot water, cold water, and it provides the strength, the innervation to the muscles of your lower extremity. So if you come in and you say, I have sciatic, and I ask you, where's your pain? And you say, it's right here, right about the belt line. Well, that's low back pain. But if you come in and you say, I have pain, it goes all the way to my foot, well, that could very well be sciatica. Sciatica is a condition of having a painful sciatic nerve. So that's what that is. Now, what causes sciatica? Well, we started this whole discussion with the low back, because most sciatica arises from the lumbar spine, problems in the lumbar spine, especially acute disc ruptures, which is where we spend most of our time for the first couple of shows. And that's, you know, the majority of cases come from the lumbar spine and disc pathology of one sort or another, but not all of it. Sometimes sciatica is caused by other things. So here's a classic example. I had a lady come in. She told me she had sciatica. I said, where's your pain? She said, well, from my butt down to my foot. Well, that sounds like sciatica. So, and how long have you had it? Couple of weeks. Okay, what are you doing about it? Well, I've been seeing a chiropractor, and she adjusts me. She puts me on my side, and she pops my back, and then puts me on my other side and pops my back. I said, is it helping? She says, no. I said, is it getting worse? She said, no, it's just the same. I said, okay. So, you know, another piece of advice my dad gave me was, don't be offended if people come to you after they've been two or three other doctors. They come to you as a last resort. Because that's helpful. A lot of times these other doctors have done things that didn't work, and so it's ruled things out for you. So I checked this lady's spine, and I could not reproduce her sciatica. Couldn't make it better, couldn't make it worse by, you know, twisting her spine, bending her from side to side, bending her forward, bending her backwards, bending her head down. None of this stuff affected her sciatica. So that's a little unusual. So usually if it's coming from lumbar spine, you can affect that pain by challenging the spine that way. So I asked her to change into a gown, a full-length gown, remove her trousers, and put the gown on. I stepped out of the room. When I came back, I stood behind her and asked her to open the gown, and diagnosis was made instantaneously. So you could see what was causing her sciatica. As some of you know what that was. Some of you who have had shingles know what that was. I saw a trail of blisters extending from her hip to her knee, vesicular lesions in various stages of resolution that are pathognomonic, classical findings of herpes zoster or shingles. And so she'd had it for 2 weeks. It was a little late to treat. I can't treat it anyway, but you know, if you catch it early, sometimes you can take an antiviral agent like acyclovir or one of the newer antiviral drugs and shorten the duration of the disease. But it was a little late for that. So I sent her to her family doc anyway. But my point is, not all sciatica comes from the spine. It can also come from a tight muscle in your hip called the piriformis muscle. However, in my experience, piriformis syndrome, as it's known, is an infrequent cause of sciatica. It does happen from time to time, but the vast majority of it comes from the spine. In my experience, and you know, I was doing it for 42 years. So, but if you think you have piriformis syndrome, you can Google it. Go to YouTube and look for piriformis syndrome, stretches for the piriformis muscle, and you do the stretches. If it gets better, then you've diagnosed it empirically. So, anyway, causes of sciatica. So the acute, my favorite cause of sciatica was an acute disrupture in a relatively young, healthy person. And the reason I like those is that all we had to do is not make it worse and the patient would get better. All I had to do was teach this patient, educate them to not rupture any more disc. And the results were usually excellent. Now, let's talk about people who are over 50 or over 60. And this is where it gets sticky. And this is why I spent so much energy trying to get people, prevent people from rupturing discs in the first place. Every time you rupture a disc, you lose some of the stuffing in that disc. So that thing tends to shrink. It gets shorter and shorter. And yeah, the jelly comes out or the toothpaste is out of the tube and your body absorbs it. But every time that happens, it leaves behind a little scar tissue, some fibrosis, and some calcification. And if you look at the diagram on the website, you see that where the nerves are trying to survive and live and do their thing, that space is precious. There's just not a lot of it. You know, it's like real estate. It's expensive. And location, 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 you can't have a lot of junk in there. So if we can prevent these ruptures from happening in the first place, people are a lot better off, because if they don't, yeah, my back's been going out. You know, that's a favorite phrase. My back went out. Well, every time it's going out, you know, you're tearing ligaments in your back. So it's been going out since the 60s. I'm usually down in 4 or 5 days at a time, 3 times a year. We take an x-ray of that person. Oh, God, it's a mess. You know, their discs are all shriveled and shrunk, and the spaces between the vertebrae are shrinking. And if that person is lucky, they were born with a capacious spinal canal, started out big with lots of room, and they can rupture discs, you know, a bunch of times over the years and still do okay. But other people don't have such a capacious canal. Sometimes they're born with a narrow canal, and it just takes one wrong move, rupture a disc, and boom, the nerve is compressed, and there's no alternative. You have to surgerize them. And even then, after you surgerize them, the spaces are not what they used to be. This, folks, is the genesis of spinal stenosis. And spinal stenosis was one of the uglier things I had to deal with. I don't like spinal stenosis because I could never treat it very well. It's a tough one. I mean, how are you going to make space where there is none? And, you know, you can do the correct exercises for stenosis, and they can help a little. It takes a long time, and it takes perseverance. It takes effort by the patient. You can do decompression, but, you know, by the time you're 70, 75, sometimes it's not easy to decompress. You know, you see a lot of advertisements for doctors who are doing decompression. You go in and 3 times a week or twice a week for months and months. But to me, that just wasn't cost effective. I always tried to get people to do their decompression at home with some sort of a traction table or inversion table. But by the time we're in our late 60s or 70s, sometimes it's not that easy to invert. Sometimes, you know, We have chronic sinusitis. As the sinuses feel like they're going to explode, or our knees or our hips or ankles won't tolerate being upside down. You know, we don't have to go totally upside down. We just go 45-degree angle or something. But my point is, it becomes more difficult to do inversion for the people who need it the most, which are those of us, you know, over 70. So stenosis is something that's best avoided, and you have to start avoiding it when you're 30. So listen up, folks. Let's try to avoid this stuff. You can keep a lot of this away if you just take care of yourselves. And where was I? Sometimes I digress too much. Anyway, I think we talked last time. We talked about, what, do I have 2 minutes? Okay. You know, we talked about causes of pain, low back pain, other than mechanical. We talked about referred pain. One thing I forgot to mention was cancer. And those of us who have had cancer before, if you come in with low back pain, that's going to be something we need to talk about and think about, make sure that that's not a factor. Sometimes it comes back. Sometimes people come in with a primary tumor they didn't even know they had, and I've seen that too. It can sneak up on a person, and that's always a worry as well. But that was last time. Today, let's talk about, again, wrapping it up on the sciatica. It's best to prevent it if you can. And if you took notes on the four basic ways to take care of your back, preserve your curve, never sit for more than 20 minutes, stand up and stretch often, do your corrective maneuvers, and walk, walk, and walk. Okay. We out of time, Truman? Okay. Well, I'm going to sign off. This is Dr. Chin, again, wishing you good health and good luck.